I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to My Perfect Console. I'm Simon Parkin, and in each episode I invite a guest to pick the five video games they would like to immortalise on their very own fictional games machine. Perhaps it was the first game they received as a birthday present, or the one that so obsessed them it caused them to fail their exams, or maybe it was the only thing that got them through a difficult breakup. Games, a bit like songs, often become powerfully attached to a particular moment in our lives. When we return to them, they can become warp points to the past. So join me, Simon Parkin, for My Perfect Console. My guest today is a British Ghanaian writer and advocate for inclusion and diversity in the video game industry. Having graduated from the University of Westminster with a degree in creative writing with English literature, she founded Melanin Gamers, a support community for people of colour who play video games or who want to join the game industry but feel unsure that there is a place for them within it. The initiative, which has more than 4,000 members worldwide, has hosted tournaments, worked alongside Microsoft and the Prince's Trust, and in 2021, Barnett's Big Idea Entrepreneurial Prize. That same year, my guest novel, A Thousand Natural Shocks, was longlisted for the Lucy Cavendish Prize, Cambridge University's Literary Award for Unpublished Women Authors. She is currently writing a graphic novel about a young boy with sickle cell anemia, as well as representing the Ghanaian Esports Federation in international relations. Welcome, Annabelle Ashley Anthony.
Thank you so much for that very warm welcome.
Oh, it's nice to meet you. Did I say your name correct there?
Yes, you did.
Okay, that's good. That's a relief. thanks so much for talking to me, Annabelle. How do you like describe what Melanin Gamers is to people who haven't heard of it?
I describe it as a gaming community that promotes inclusion and diversity in the video games industry.
Right, yeah. And tell me about how it came about. I read that it was to do with an experience that your brother Alan had while playing online. Is that correct? And
yeah.
And if so, can you tell me about it?
I mean, it was to do with a lot of things, to be honest. It was different experiences that I had, that I saw people having, just looking at the gaming industry and the games that I played and not seeing the representation that I wanted and my own experiences. And we'd been talking, like I say we, because I have a lot of friends who are gamers. My brother's also a game too. So a lot of us were always complaining like, oh, there's only that one black character. And it was always just that talk like, oh, we should do something about this. Why is this happening? Why are they doing this? I guess that's why I cite the example that happened to my brother as like, I guess the last straw. Well, it was one of the series of last straws because there was a few incidents around that time. That I was just like, how can this keep happening?
So when was this?
Oh, this was, I mean, what happened to my brother was, I guess, maybe a few months before I properly started Melanin Gamers. I have two brothers. One of them is Alan. He works with me at Melanin Gamers, actually. And the other one is Adam, who's younger. He's the youngest. So Alan was playing Overwatch and wants to be Grandmaster. That's like the creme de la creme of... That's like the height of Overwatch, basically.
Yeah.
And he said that if he could make Grandmaster whilst holding down a full-time job, then technically it means he would have been top 500 in Overwatch. That is rationale. And so he was playing with a team. He was on his way to being Grandmaster, but his own team were being racist towards him.
Please.
And I was just like, oh, he really wants to make Grandmaster, but this team is really bad. And my sister heard it. She's not a gamer, our older sister. And she was just like, what's happening? What is this? Like, pause the game. That's how little she knows about.
She overheard it coming through the TV speakers?
Yeah. Because he was playing it out loud. And she called our parents in, and they were just like, why are they doing this to you? This is his own teammates, not even the enemy team, which would be understandable.
So were they just calling him names and stuff, you mean?
Yeah, like racial slurs and things like that. They said he should stop playing Overwatch. And he did play Overwatch for 3 months. He wasn't allowed to. And so...
How old was he at the time?
He was in his early 20s.
Okay, right, yeah.
I can't remember the exact age that he was. And then Adam saw this whole situation, and he was being bullied in school. And he didn't say anything because to him, he saw what happened to Alan as like, oh, well, something, he did something wrong for them to be bullying him. And I was just like,
yes.
So he saw it in reverse, like, you got your favorite thing taken away from you because of bullying.
Yes.
And I was just like, you're too young to think that there's something wrong with you because you're getting bullied. That's why you're getting bullied.
Yes.
And that's sort of how online gaming works, you know? Even when I went online for the first time, I was like, oh, mute your mic. Do this, make sure you pick a name that doesn't sound like a feminine name. There was all these things I had to do because there was bullies online, which were just an accepted part of the gaming experience.
Yes.
And so I was just like, this can't go on.
So this is, I guess, particularly like with any online games where women pop up, often they can, you know, be the subject of comments or whatever.
And, exactly, you know, exactly.
Unwanted attention, I guess, in real life, but on games, it's even more pronounced, right? Because you're behind the screen and all of that kind of thing.
And it was just like, it was having real world consequences. This was more than just our gaming. And like this was having like an effect on how Adam was seeing the world. And at such a young age, and I was just like, this, we can't just be accepting this anymore. Because that's kind of what we do. We just kind of accept how gaming is, and that's just how it is. And so I was like, no, no more of this. And my brother was like, who wins if I stop losing? And those words really stuck to me. Like, he stopped playing his favorite game, which is not the best, but it's just like the bullies win ultimately in the end because they continued playing. Maybe they made Grandmaster, I'm not sure, but he didn't get to make Grandmaster because of something that was out of his control. So that's, those are like the driving factors of me starting Melanin Gamers.
So their bad behavior led to your brother essentially being punished and being the victim of that in some way. And so you were hoping with Melanin Gamers to, am I right in thinking, create a community where people could play together at Overwatch and other games where perhaps they're going to feel, you know, they're just not going to be targeted or victimized or made called names or whatever.
Exactly.
Is that the idea?
Yeah. Yep, that was definitely the idea behind that.
How do people like find each other then? How do you put them in contact? Is it just literally sharing gamer tags and PSN IDs on your website?
Oh, no, not on our website. Goodness, no. We have a Discord.
Okay.
So there's quite a lot of us. And you have to sort of sign up to our Discord. You can't just come in because just to like make sure that trolls, we do get quite a few, with a name like Melanin Gamers, we're bound to attract a few trolls. I say a few, but quite a lot of trolls.
Really?
So that's why we have a sign-up sheet, so that just to stop them from coming into our protected space.
People who know nothing about video games kind of know that the video game industry, not the industry, people who play video games, particularly teenagers, it can be a highly toxic environment. Mm. It's just well known for that, right?
It is, yeah.
You could ask most people in the street, why do you think that is? Why do you think it's particularly around video games that this kind of behavior seems to happen? Is it just that that's where the kids are?
No, I don't. I think it's online. It's an online thing. Like you'll find Reddit threads that are very toxic. Twitter. It's a lack of accountability. Being a keyboard warrior, there's no punishment as well. You can say whatever you want. if you did that in real life, someone would probably hit you, you know? So you'd probably be like, should I say this thing out loud? There's a consequence to your action. So you'll rethink whether you should do that action. Online, you can say whatever you want and you can get away with it. And so you can keep doing that. And then it will create a culture of, we can all just say whatever we want in this space. We're all going to get away with it. So like, why don't we continue doing this? And that sort of breeds that toxicity. And then when you go into that space and everyone else is doing it, you start doing it as well. You know? So that's why it's sort of like a vicious cycle.
Yeah. So you said part of the work of Melanin Gamers is to provide a community for like-minded people and people from similar backgrounds to play together in a safe kind of environment. But also at the start, you said that it was born out of a slight frustration of like a lack of representation, maybe within video games themselves, a lack of diversity, that was something that you and your friends were talking about. Yeah, why do you think that's important to have increased representation of underrepresented groups? How does that benefit people and the industry? Why is it a good thing to have?
Well, diversity, as my brother knows the statistic on this more than I do, but actually make more money and create better games, more well-rounded games, you know? Teams that everyone looks the same, acts the same, you're going to create the same kind of game over and over again, which will get stale and repetitive. So that the benefit of having a diverse team is actually better for the industry in terms of like, if we're talking about just the money and how much money they can make. But in terms of representation, what it means to people to see themselves represented, you can't be what you can't see. When you see somebody that looks like you and it's like, oh, I can attain this as well. When you are faced in an environment where nobody looks like you, it's intimidating as hell. And you're just like, oh, well, is this a path that I can break into if nobody here looks like me? And I'm not saying it's like no one will break into that path because no one looks like them, but it is a deterrent, you know, when you see that and you're just like, nobody here looks like me. How will I be able to break in? Is this space for me as well? There are many gamers who won't even realize, like, for example, me, I love writing. That's one of my favorite things to do. I love gaming. I didn't know there was such a thing as a games writer until I started Melanin Gamers. I didn't know that was even a career. And a lot of when we go into schools, especially schools that are in underprivileged areas, they just, when we say, how's a game made? Oh, a programmer does the game from start to finish. And that's their idea of a game being made. I was like, there's writers, there's music, there's all of that sort of stuff. And it's also about education, you know, in these areas, especially where a career in gaming is not even something that's even heard of. So that's why it's also important to increase the representation so that they know that these spaces are also for them as well.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's important to say that the UK games industry body, UKIP, put out a report that just 2% of people working in the UK games industry come from the black and brown community.
Exactly.
The stats very much back up what you say. Just for like a positive, I guess, note as well to introduce that, you work a lot with companies in this space to sort of help them put on events that are diverse and welcoming. Can you shout out any video game companies that have shown themselves to be, you know, both active and authentic in supporting this kind of work? I mean, I know loads of companies say that they are, but which ones have you seen actually follow through on that?
Well, Yuki, for one, as you just mentioned, we have worked with them on different things and we're part of the Raise the Game pledge. EA, I want to say EA have really, I think, really shown that they're actually trying to do something and work hard and try to bridge the gap as well when it comes to the different things that they're doing and the schemes. Even though we haven't personally worked with them, Rocksteady, I've seen that they've been working with other companies and they are really trying to increase representation. So I will say that even though we haven't personally worked with them, they are doing what, you know, that they said that they would kind of do. And there's a lot of follow through because I think a lot of companies, there's a lot of performative activism, but some of these companies, what they said that they want to do, they are actually doing it as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Okay, Annabelle, well, let's talk about some video games. So I've asked you to pick the 5 video games you'd like to put on your ideal fictional games machine. You've picked 5 brilliant games here. Really excited to chat about these. Why don't you tell us about your first game, which is from 2004. What is it and why do you love it?
San Andreas. Why do I love Salamanders? Why wouldn't anyone like a GTA game? There are so many things to do in that one game. If you want to race, there's racing. You want to fight, there's fighting. Shooting, it's so many genres in one game if you think about GTA. I guess San Andreas has a special place in my heart because it was the game that made me realize I wanted to be a gamer. Like, I'd played games before. One of the first games I played was like Mario on N64, like old school. But I played GTA from start to finish. The storyline, everything that I could do in the game, I was just like, this is so cool. This thing that I can do, like this world that I can jump into. I want to keep doing this forever. And I remember that was such a distinct memory when I complete the game and I was just sat there like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep playing. Is there more things like this? Like, that was when like I was like, oh, I want to be a gamer. I want to be playing games. So that's why that has like such an important memory for me.
Yeah. You know,
because of that reason. Yeah.
So it was like the Grand Theft Auto that was set in the state, the fictional state of San Andreas. Mm. I think it's a state, isn't it? Or it's a huge area anyway. The game is
just
massive, isn't it? And you play as, I can't remember the protagonist's name, but he's sort of from the hood, isn't he? It's an American set game. And it's all about his progress out of that situation, isn't it? So how old were you when you were playing that game?
Not old enough. That game was an 18.
I'm not trying to get you in trouble. I
wasn't 18 at the time I was playing that game. But, you know, it is what it is.
So was that something that your brothers had got hold of? That's why you got to play it? Or
no, my brothers are younger than me. I'm older than them.
Oh, right.
So if anything,
okay.
It was a bad influence. My parents, they got that for us.
Oh, they did? Okay, cool.
Oh, out my parents here. But yeah, they were just like, oh yeah, it's this game, here you go. And games were always bought for good grades. So it was always like a special moment, like, okay, I want that game. And they wouldn't refuse us because they were like, you kept your deal. You get to the end of the bargain, so now pick any game. And it was GTA, I wanted it, son.
So tell me, where did you grow up? Was it in London or Ghana as well?
No, I grew up here in London. I've grown up a few places, actually. Lived in Canada for a bit, Philadelphia in America, and in Ghana, all for like not more than 8 months at a time because my parents were trying to settle where they wanted to go. But they ultimately came back to London. And so we've been in Kilburn until a few years ago, and then we moved to West Hampton.
Nice. Yeah. And what word did your parents see to take them to all those places?
I guess because my mum was born here, but my dad was born in Ghana.
Okay.
So it was just like coming over here to find work and where family were.
Yeah.
So we had family in Canada. That's why he wanted to stay there and like get work and like get his stay in the country. And then in Philadelphia again, they had family there. So working again for opportunities. And actually he did get a job there with Mercedes, but it was because of me they had to move back to London. I have sickle cell anemia, and if you know, America does not have free healthcare. So
right.
It was getting expensive for them because of me. I kept going to hospital, and so we had to move back to London, where fortunately healthcare is
right. Yeah, I was going to ask you about the sickle cell because I know you raise a lot of money for sickle cell charities. So is that something that you were diagnosed with when you were very small, or I'm not quite sure at what point people realize that that's something that they have, and what does it mean as well for you?
So I was born with it, but my parents didn't know I had it. So they're both carriers, and when you're a carrier, you don't have any symptoms really.
Uh-huh.
And so you can go your whole life not knowing you carry. So when you get someone else who carries, you have a 1 in 4 chance of having. So I was diagnosed around 6 months, so quite early. My fingers were swollen. My mum was like, "What? What's wrong with this baby?" And so I got diagnosed, and that was a lot. It was very difficult because it wasn't something my parents knew about really. It was like they'd heard about it like in an abstract sort of way, but it was like,
yes.
What's sickle cell? What's happening? Why do I get sick sometimes? Like, what's triggering these episodes that's landing me in hospital?
So what does it mean?
Oh, so sickle cell anemia is an inherited blood disorder. It affects, well, everything, everywhere the blood goes. So your organs, it makes you really tired, and it can trigger episodes of pain, which is called a sickle cell crisis. And a sickle cell crisis is like, so sickles are sickle shaped, so that's like a banana shape. Instead of, your red blood cells are banana shaped instead of being round and soft. And so they can get trapped in places, which is why my hands and feet sometimes swell up. So it's like if you held your wrist, you realize your hand will start swelling up. And that's what's happening to my body inside.
Right.
Like you can have a stroke. There's a lot of things that sickle cell can affect. It can make you tired as well because you're not getting enough oxygen because sickle cells can't hold as much oxygen as a normal red blood cell. So a lot of time spent in hospital, a lot of time just like lying down, not being able to do anything.
Yeah.
Hence why I started gaming. Because I've had a lot of free time and not being able to do much.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, that's why I'm a gamer.
And do you take medication for that as well? Is it something do you need your blood thin slightly or how does it work? What makes it bearable?
I used to get transfusions, so blood transfusions. I can't anymore, but I used to get blood transfusions, which was the best thing ever. I felt like a superhero afterwards. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Because I had like good blood in me. But yeah, I have to take medicine every single day. To like control my condition. I'm immunocompromised. So I was social distancing before it became a thing during COVID. I was like, oh, I know. I've been doing this my whole life. I was like, they're like, why do you have antibac on you already? I was like, I've been carrying antibacteria since I was born, basically, because I can't touch anything. Because if someone sneezes down the road, I'll catch it. So stuff like that, I just have to be very hyper-vigilant of what I'm touching, washing my hands, like making sure that I'm not exposing myself to too many things in that way because I get you know, colds very easily and it also takes me a long time to get over them as well because my immune system is not working very well.
It's interesting. I guess that helps explain why some of these online, particularly, you know, online games where you play with other people and have community are so important to you and why it's so important that those are safe places for you to play, right? Because if you can't leave your house or go and hang out with people for whatever reason because you're poorly, then games are a wonderful way to like enable you to do that, aren't they?
Exactly. That's why gaming is so important to me. I would say gaming helped save my life because it was such a lifeline, a very difficult time in my life in terms of like coming to terms with, oh my God, I have this thing forever. There's no cure. What do I do? I can still talk to people. I can still compete, you know? And like I can, even if I'm not able-bodied, my mind is be as good as others.
Right, Annabelle, let's come to your second game then, which you've been slightly sneaky here and it's really three games wrapped into one, but so we'll let it slide. So this is from 2012. Tell us what the game is and why you love it.
Assassin's Creed. Oh my God.
But specifically Ezio's Trilogy.
Trilogy. I love Assassin's Creed in general, but Ezio's Trilogy is so well-crafted a trilogy, and that is very rare to find something that the first, second, and third you like them. So usually it's like, but I love all three so like equally. And the fact that they made Ezio, old man Ezio in Revelations, it was the first time I'd known like an old man to be like fit and young, and it changed my perception of old people, I guess. When I played, I was like, he's so fit on you. I was like, you know, I tell my nieces and nephews, I'm in my third, they're like, you're so old. I'm like, wait, what? you're ancient. I'm like, no, I'm not.
Come and meet Ezio.
He's so cool. Like, it was just the story. Like, I love storytelling. So before I go into gaming, I really like reading. I still like reading, like, more than gaming, which is a big thing to make, I know. But I like a good story. I love a very well-crafted story to get lost in. Because I was always in hospital, like, I really liked, oh my God, I can just open a book and I can be in this world. And I don't have to feel like I'm on the ward. And so gaming was just like, it was like a book I could play. That's what I felt like. Especially like these really strong narratives with these really rich worlds. And Ezio's trilogy, like, just getting to know this character from the way he starts, the middle, like, just the way they crafted that story from each game was so amazing. And I replayed that game so many times and it just never loses its magic for me. Yeah. You know, it's still so good. It's just, it's brilliant. Like, can't fault it.
Very briefly, everyone knows what Assassin's Creed is, but the first three games in particular, you play as this assassin related to the Knights Templar, I think, and you're sort of going around Italy mainly, aren't you, and taking down targets and then hiding in hay bales to evade detection from the roaming soldiers. And each of the, I can't remember what the cities are of the first three games. Do you remember off the top of your head?
Oh, no, you're trying to kill the Templar. The Templars are actually villains in this.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah. They are the villains. They are the bad guys. You want to kill them.
And are all three set in Italy? Am I right in thinking that, or does it move around a bit?
It does move around. It does move around. Ezio is from Italy, but he does go to different places.
Right, yeah.
In the games.
Yeah, they've got this, and you're also, there's a whole parkour element to the games as well, where you have to scale the towers in that way that's now very familiar in Ubisoft open world games, and then you sort of look around from this high skyscraper and it fills out the map in the surrounding area, and then you leap off to a swan dive, don't you, into a bale of hay. A leap of faith, that's it. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, into
it's
a bale great, of hay, which makes no sense at all, but it works for Assassin's Creed.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Right, so tell me, you've said there that you were, as well as being into games while you were recuperating in hospital and things, you were also really into reading. What kind of stuff were you into when you were a kid?
Oh, all sorts of books. My parents started me off on like Judy Blume books, but I really got into like sci-fi fantasy because I like a world you can escape into. But I also liked normal books just about like Jack and Wilson, just like people going to school and just like, because I felt like I couldn't experience those things. And so I was really interested in, I don't say this anymore. I was like, how do normal people live? What do they do? What do they do? Just like to have like normal, ordinary problems, you know?
So were you not going into school then? Were you having to stay at home a lot of the time?
Sometimes, yeah. So it would be sometimes like 5-week stretches in hospital. Yeah. So quite a long time. Some of my exams were sat in the hospital. So we had like a hospital school that I'd sometimes go to. And then even when I got home, I'd have to wait a bit before I got back in school. So It was not easy, but that's why these worlds that I could escape into was so important for me.
Yeah, right. I can see why you were allowed video games then, you know, at a quite a young age, because I suppose they were seen as a very positive thing for you. Were you able to play much in the hospital?
Yeah, I was. I was able to. There was a gaming room.
Oh, there was? Nice.
Yeah. And I absolutely loved it. I was like, this is amazing. I love this place. And
at what point are you thinking that you want to become a writer? Because, you go on to study writing at university. So I'm guessing that was a dream of yours. When did that sort of surface?
Oh, very young. So when I was writing these books, when I was reading these books, I was like, I wanted to write my own stories as well. I was like, I love these stories so much. And I started thinking of my own stories. So they came almost at the same time when I started loving reading. I was like, I also wanted to create stories as well. And I guess it's something my dad really encouraged. Whenever we went away, he was like, write a report over the weekend about, like, if we'd go up like north to visit like relatives, he's like, everyone write a report about what we did this weekend. And I used to love it so much. Like, it was not homework to me.
Like a little sort of journalistic feature about what you'd seen when you went off there.
Exactly. Nice. And I loved it. So I guess because of that, it sort of brought that out of me in terms of like wanting to write.
Oh, that's so cool. And so were you trying your hand at any novels at that time, or did that come later?
Oh yeah, that came much. It was more like shorter stories. You know, like sort of snapshots, almost the way like I'd been told to write by my dad, like reports.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. And then was it when you go off to university, was that made more complicated by the fact that you were having to go into hospital quite a lot, or how did that all work?
That was a very difficult time. And thank goodness for like the support I had and my parents, because it was very stressful. And I didn't know at the time, but stress is one of my biggest triggers. And I didn't connect it just yet. So it was talking to them about like this condition and not making the same mistakes, I guess, I made in secondary school.
Right.
In terms of just, I didn't tell people I had sickle cell. I hid it because I was always get these looks of sympathy and people started treating me differently. So I was like, I can't do that in university because they kind of have to know why I keep disappearing every few, you know, like, where'd you go? I don't know, I just would lie. Because I didn't want them to know I was sick, and obviously, well, ultimately, they found out. So in university, I was just like, "This is the thing I have," and then they were like, "Oh, there's all this support you're offered." And I was like, "What? That's amazing! Thank you."
So your the university didn't know that you suffered from this when you first started. That's something that you revealed later, or was it just the other students?
No. At the beginning, when I was applying, I told them. Other students didn't know until I told them. Sometimes they would like. They'd wonder if something was wrong because my eyes are quite yellow. I'm quite jaundiced naturally, even though I drink a lot of water. Their guesses sometimes were a bit hurtful. Like, did I have a drinking problem? Did I have this? Did I have that? And so I was still a bit cagey about telling students about why I was like this. And so it was eventually when I started opening up. But during the university, I wasn't really that upfront with the students.
How did it feel when you started sort of telling? I suppose it's a very vulnerable moment, isn't it? Mm. When you start opening up about that, how did it feel? Did it feel relief or because I suppose you were hiding it because you wanted to be treated as someone that doesn't have, you know, the experiences that you'd had in secondary school.
No, it's so much better now to be honest and just let people know immediately what's wrong, especially if I'm going to be around someone for a very long time. Why I can't do certain things, why I was like, oh, if I make plans, I have to cancel, or if I'm having a crisis, call the ambulance immediately. This is not like, because I don't always look like I'm sick, but it's a time sensitive thing. If you don't get to the hospital within a certain time frame, it's one, you could die, or like it's going to be so much longer, the recovery process. So I could just be sitting here like this. And sorry, this is audio. So I could just be sitting here looking like I'm absolutely fine. But I'm not. I'm actually dying. And so that also led me to be like, I have to stop telling people because, like, for example, I went to visit my uncle and I didn't tell him that I had sickle cell. I thought he knew. It wasn't something I tried to hide. And he's like, oh, let's go for a walk. Let's walk it off. I had pneumonia at the time. I didn't know. He was like, let's just walk it off. I was like,
oh, gosh.
I'm about to.
I don't think it works like that.
I think I need medication and some other stuff. That's also why it's important to tell people. But years of therapy have gotten me to this place of of sanity and just being honest.
Yeah, making peace with your body, I suppose, isn't it?
Exactly.
In some ways.
Yeah.
Okay, let's come to your third game then, Annabelle. You actually again wanted to pick two games here, but I forced you to come down on one rather than the other. So this is from 2013. Tell us about this game.
Oh, I mean, who doesn't know The Last of Us? Like, it's just not just because of the TV show, which, by the way, was absolutely brilliant. I was so happy with it because I was really nervous. I was like, please don't ruin one of my favorite games. And they did, oh, the job they did with it, no, it was just absolutely brilliant. If I had imagined it, I couldn't have imagined something as amazing as what they actually did. And The Last of Us, again, storytelling is why I love gaming. So very well crafted story. When my brother first told me about The Last of Us, he said, oh, this horror game, this new horror game. I was like, huh? Horror game? I don't know. Even though I like horror films, I was like, well, I want to play a horror. Because it's like reading a horror. Like, well, you know, when you're reading a horror book, you have to get past the part that scares you. It's not like a film. You could just pause it. You have to, like, oh my God, this is so scary. I have to keep reading it though, because I'm afraid. And so I was like, that's the same thing's going to happen with the game. I have to get past this level. And if I'm stuck on this level, that's terrifying me. What am I going to do? That's how he pitched it. So I was like, oh, I don't know. He's like, oh, try it. Trust me, you're going to like it. It's a good story. And those are the key words. And I was like, oh, good story. That always hooks me in. And I'm so glad I listened to him because, oh my goodness. I was like, this game is amazing. This game is wonderful. Very well-crafted story. And the debates that it has sprung up about people, about who was right and who was wrong. There's so many spirited debates that we've had in this household as well about, did Joel make the right decision and all of this? Like, it's just...
Yeah, so just to explain this to anyone who hasn't played the game. So it's set in post-apocalyptic America and features this father figure, Joel, and the girl at the centre of the drama. Just to explain what you're talking about there, the debates over...
with Ellie, who is the... I guess Ellie and Joel are both the protagonists, and she is in the first game, and... there's this zombie apocalypse, and this is a spoiler, but I hope everyone would have either watched it or played the game. She's immune, and to get to get the cure out of her, they'd have to kill her because the cure is in her brain. And Joel stops this from happening because they didn't ask Ellie. They literally just put her under and were going to kill her without her permission to get the cure, which would have saved millions. Yeah. I know, but they could have just asked her. Anyway, Joel kills the doctor who will save humanity, rescues Ellie, and they get out of the way. He lies to Ellie and tells her that unfortunately this, you know, it didn't work out and all that sort of thing. And it's a spawn, the debate after debate after debate as to whether Joel did the right thing. To escape with Ellie, he killed, I don't know, dozens of people to do it. But he had to do what he had to do. He had to protect Ellie. And that was his job. And that's the job that they gave him to do. So... you kind of re-put you, sir. You told this man to protect this girl with your life. And he did that to a T. then you try and kill the same girl. Like, I think Ellie would have said yes, but they didn't give her the opportunity to say yes. That's my personal gripe. I was like, ask Ellie. And then that would have calmed Joel down.
Yeah.
She was the only person that would have been able to convince Joel that she wanted to save humanity this way. But because they took away her choice, Joel had to protect her. So, yeah. Again, that's why it's so brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this very sort of climactic scene where they're escaping from the hospital, aren't they? And
it's such a hard level, by the way.
Yeah. How did that feel as someone who had spent a great deal of her life in hospitals playing that section?
Come rescue me, Joel. I was with Joel. I was like, yeah, she doesn't want to be there, trust me.
Shoot the doctor.
Escape immediately. The amount of times I've thought about escaping from hospital, loads of times. So that was actually a very satisfying scene. I loved it.
Oh dear. So let's get back to your story then, Annabelle. So you've worked for the NHS for a bit as well. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
So that's you graduate with your degree in literature and English literature and writing as well, and then so what took you, I guess you'd been in and around the NHS for a long time of your life. What made you decide to go there, to go back there?
Who knows? I'm joking. I guess my sister was working there and she was just like, they have very good, they would also understand. So saying I have sickle cell, they're like, huh, what? Is usually the reaction I get. Now, when you say the same thing in a hospital, you don't usually get that reaction. I'm kidding. You actually do.
Really?
Even by some doctors. I've had a doctor ask me, when did I get sickle cell? And I was like, oh dear, because it's an inherited condition. I was born with it. So I was like, oh, well, you're not treating me because you need it.
Yeah, back to medical school for you.
Working was always very problematic because wherever I worked, sometimes in the past, I used to hide it. Obviously, it would eventually come out because I can't not get sick, unfortunately. That's just my lot in life. And then they would be like, why do you keep missing work? Sometimes I just try to use my annual leave, but I can't always predict when I'm going to be sick. And so working for an institution that would, I guess, make adjustments as well was important to be like, oh, if I can work from home sometimes, if I can work with, like, in a place where I don't have to be around patients, in a place where I can be very closed off, in a place, mainly just nothing that's physically demanding as well, you know, because I can't do it. I've tried to, but it's not possible.
Yeah. So alongside your work with the NHS, you also, of course, do your work with melanin gamers, we talked about. I listened to another interview with you where you were saying that there's still a stigma around working in and around video games. And I think that's true across the board. You know, if you say you work, when I was younger and mainly reviewing video games, if I would say that to people, they'd go, oh, you just sit around all day doing nothing or whatever. And I'm sure lots of people who work in games get that as well, or have had that. But you seem to be saying that this is especially something in Black communities that it can be a bit looked down on.
Yeah, it still is right now.
Has that been your experience?
It's getting better. But it's still definitely, gaming is just, that's not a career path. That's just something that you do in your leisure time. It is still, of course, something you can do in your leisure time. But there's actual careers, you know, in gaming that are like 9-to-5 jobs, that sort of thing. And it's still something that, you just sit around doing. I'm just like, no, you gamers are some of the hardest working people that I know. Creating a game, you know how much effort that takes. It takes a lot. And so it's frustrating that that's something that is actually really difficult. It's seen as easy, you know, or lazy, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I wonder where that comes from. Maybe it's linked in some way to the poor representation of people of colour within the games industry. So there's just not that understanding. But of course, I mean, it's a monumental industry and you always get the stats trotted out about how it's bigger than films and music put together and all that nonsense. But, you know, it is true. It's definitely an industry.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's making a lot of money. And so I'm just like, why are people not getting in on that?
But I mean, your organization, Melanin Gamers, you won, as I mentioned in the introduction, you won Barnett's Big Idea Entrepreneurial Prize in 2020. Surely that's had an effect as people around you can see the impact
there is
that
change,
you're having.
But it's still slow. And I think it's because of education, which is why we focus on that quite a lot now more than ever in terms of like working with different schools, colleges, that sort of thing, community centers, so that just people know that there is another option kind of thing in terms of a career path.
Why don't we come to your fourth game then, Annabelle, which is from 2014. This is a slightly different pace to the first three games, I think. A bit more domestic scale. Tell us about this one.
2014?
The Sims 4? Is it 20?
Oh, The Sims 4. Was that 2014?
Apparently. I looked it up.
Oh my goodness, no way. What?
I will fact check myself on that, but I did look it up. The Sims 4.
I'm not trying to like, no, that it's just, it's unbelievable. I believe you. It's just, it's unbelievable. Like, 2014? Was that what
it was? Yeah, I just looked it up. The 2nd of September, 2014. Well, that's when it was released in North America. And, actually, if you played it on console, they came out a couple of years later, 2017.
No, I got that on
PC. Oh, you did?
Okay. What? Insane that we were playing this, and I got it the day it came out. I was so excited. It was sealed as well, and I was just waiting. I had an exam when it came out. My exams were there, and I was like, if I unseal it, I will play it. So it was just like,
a little treat for when you finish your exam.
I kept touching it, like I was just like, I can't wait. I was so hyper, like. And it did not disappoint me at all. And my expectation was sky high. Ooh. And it was just, it met every, I'm still playing Sims now. Like that's why I find it so hard to believe that it's been that long. I guess it's because there's so many like expansion packs. Ooh. I still feel so fresh.
So I'm guessing Sims 4 wasn't your first Sims game. So what was it about the fourth one that you loved so much?
The graphics, the improvements of different things that you could do. And also it was the first time I played Sims on PC properly, my own. I got myself a gaming laptop as a treat, and it was like this gaming laptop was customized. It was pink. Pink is my favorite color, and it was just like, this is, I want to play Sims on this. This is why I've gotten it, for Sims.
What is it?
Everything ran so smoothly. It was just perfect. I had so many hours of Sims. I still have the. It records how, like, it will give you, like, a little notification this time. 11 hours and 30 minutes is how. And I've never played another game for that long a stretch in one sitting.
Oh, in one sitting? Oh, that's good going.
I know. And I'm just like, it was time very well spent.
Yes. So you had to say, in The Sims, everyone knows what The Sims is, but you, so it's sort of like a doll's house simulator. I mean, that makes it sound less than what it is, but you look after...
it's play with life.
Yeah, it's like you look after a home, and there's people and there's relationships, and you set things up. And what kind of overseer are you to your Sims? Are you benevolent and kind to them?
Oh, it depends at what story I'm telling. That's why I love The Sims. You can, I do a story for every Sim that I have, so I have like a really extensive backstory, and then like this is how I kind of want to think. So before I even start, I'm just like, okay, this is what her teenage years were like, and this is why she acts like this. So there's a very big backstory that I write for every character.
Really? Okay, tell us one of them. Give us an example.
So currently, the Sims I'm playing now, which is why I still can't be with 2014. It's I'm playing one of the in-game characters, but I've changed her story. So she's quite a snobby woman, but she's sort of had a change of heart because she meets this farmer that she's shooting. She's an actress, and they're like using his farm to film a location. She falls in love with him and everything like that. But she kind of just feels like she has to hide him away because of her glitz and glam life. He's also training.
Secret farm boy lover. That she's ashamed of.
But he's actually very clever. So he's an astronaut, and she doesn't know this. So he has his own backstory. So every character, I've written his backstory as well. And so he goes away, like, so the time that she's trying to, he goes away for 5 years on a space mission. She's had a child that's now 5 years old. So the day that she goes to say that she actually wants to, like, go public with their relationship, his spacecraft blows up. and she witnesses it. I'm not that benevolent, clearly.
Gosh. So she feels real bad that...
Oh, yeah, she really does.
Oh, wow. And
she has a very strained relationship with her daughter because of it. So that's the story that I'm actually on right now.
Okay. A lot of this is happening off screen, though, isn't it? This is just not stuff that's actually happening in the game. You're just writing this sort of as backstory in your head for while you're playing.
Yeah. The stuff that happens in the game is when she has the daughter. So I start the story of when she has the daughter. So then I play the daughter, who's much younger, and I play her as well. And then their relationship, that's when I can get to interact with different things.
Right. I see.
So the rest of it happened as a story I wrote. But you can actually input that story with The Sims and you can click on it, which is pretty cool.
Okay, you should do a book of these, like a little collection of all your Sim stories and put it out. I think people would be into that.
And people have done that and they've been able to like, do full length. So they can, you know, the part even I mentioned about her, him, his spaceship getting blown. People have been able to actually craft that.
Oh, right.
And like, yeah, it's crazy.
Wow.
It's amazing what they can do with Sims.
Cool. I feel like I'm a bit behind on where the Sims community is at. Wow, it sounds incredible.
Oh, wow. It's a huge community.
Cool. So, I mentioned in the intro that you have been representing the Ghanaian Esports Federation in international relations. Tell me about, how did that come about and what does that work entail?
So I'm from Ghana, like, you know, that's my ancestry. And so I wanted to, so whenever we go back to Ghana, we go back for holiday sometimes.
Yeah.
And we used to game in these like little, you know, like a giant container, basically, you know, those shipping containers.
Yeah.
They'd set up like gaming systems there and people would just go and pay to game. They'd be like three PlayStation, then you could go into those containers to game. And so when I went back to Ghana 2020 to put on a, I was like, I know Ghana has had a gaming industry since when I was young, when we were going back and playing in those little containers. And so I wanted to put on an event there. So I reached out to people who were already in Ghana. And some of the people who were following us, Melanin Gamers, they were from Ghana. So I was like, I'd love to put on a tournament actually over there. And so I went back and I realized that it's actually way more advanced than the containers that we used to play in.
Right.
Which was amazing. And I was like, this is so cool. I can't believe how much... Of course it would be though, so I don't know why I was surprised.
Yeah.
Other people who were seeing what Melanie Gamers were doing. So like the owner of Arena, which is a gaming, like an esports center, which I'd liken it to something in London. The owner is from Canada.
Yeah.
OTM as well. The owner is Polish. So these are like larger scale gaming centers. And so just wanting to do events there and also just shine a light on the gaming industry in Ghana and like West Africa and Africa as a whole. And the fact that there was one. So, because even when I put some of the pictures online, people were like, oh my God, I can't believe they have electricity.
Right. Oh, jeez.
So I was just like, what? Come on now. Electricity? Really? Is that what we're doing? So it was important to sort of change that stigma. Because even when they were just like, oh, you're in Africa. I was like, I'm in Ghana, which is in West Africa. Which is like, Africa is not a country. It's a continent. It's all of loads of different. So it's also that sort of changing the narrative there a little bit.
Yeah.
And the work that we were doing. So we went back in, we were there in 2021. And then in 2022, we put on the first event that EA sponsored in. It was the first event that EA had ever sponsored in Ghana, in-person event. And so that was a really big deal. And putting that on, that was amazing.
Right. What game were people playing?
Apex, of course.
Of course.
Come on. and of course, FIFA. So Ghana is a very, very big football nation. A huge football nation, and they love FIFA over there. They love FIFA over in across the continent, especially West Africa, because games like FIFA can be played live and you can get very good at them. So they don't need, I guess, a lot of internet use. Like, internet's very expensive.
Yep.
So it can be, you can get very good at it in a cheaper way than games like Call of Duty or Overwatch or Apex, because you'd have to connect to a server. So yeah, we had a FIFA tournament, Apex tournament, because you know, Apex is amazing. And so just playing that game and having a tournament and showcasing the talent that was there was very important. And then the Esports Federation in Ghana like saw the work that I was doing, many games were doing, just like, we would love to sort of partner with you, like the way that you keep bringing like outside sources into Ghana. And then that's why they offered me the role of international relations.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, better be pleased when you turned up with EA in your pocket.
Yes, they were. They were very happy about that.
That's wonderful. Well, I mean, this seems like a really good time to come to your fifth and your final game. So tell us about this one. You just mentioned it there. What's the game and how did you get into it?
Apex Legends, one of my favourite games ever. Apex launched quite, I guess it was, it didn't have any marketing, it just launched on the day. And so people were like, what's this game? And it creates such a buzz, a huge influx of players. And I was just looking at the players and I was like, I'd never seen a game like this that launched just like that, with so many diverse characters. And I was like, this is amazing. And it made the characters who they were, rather than that's a black character, that's this character. It was just, that's a character, you know, and they were more than their race. Which is what I really liked. So, because I went to read about the lore of the game and I realized that it's from Titanfall universe. So Titanfall was a game that came out before from Respawn.
Amazing game. Yeah.
Yeah. Phenomenal game. I went back to play it.
So good. Yeah.
The lore, I was like, this is amazing. I love a very good story. So my brother was like, this is from Titanfall. It's a Titanfall. I was like, what's that? And then obviously I had to go back and play Titanfall. But I was just... downloaded. I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to play this, because I guess a week earlier I don't like first person games. I like to see the character, because you know I like to control the character. Like, I'm a simmer. that's where I'm coming from. It's like you could just see the gun. I didn't really like. That's why I could never get into Call of Duty, because it was like just seeing the gun. How do I immerse myself in the story? I don't like it.
Interesting. Yeah.
And Apex is FPS. And I was like, oof. But he was like, trust me, you're going to like it. It's from Titan. I was like, okay. I was very bad. I was awful. And before that, I'd only played Rainbow Six like a week or two earlier. So I'd just been getting into FPS. And I was like, I don't know if I like this. But I was determined to like see where the story was going with this. I really liked the different things that they'd done. And my brother was like, he would teach me. And he really helped me, because my aim was awful. Awful. I just hid in a corner. To be honest, I wasn't even trying to shoot anyone else.
So we should say Apex is it sits within the battle royale genre. So, which for anyone who doesn't know, started with the very famous film Battle Royale and the books. It's a bit like Hunger Games, isn't it? Where you're dropped onto an island or onto a world, and you have to scavenge for weapons, and then all the time the sort of playable circle area gets smaller and smaller, pushing everyone together, and it's just basically the last player out of the 100 or 150. Is the winner, isn't it? And with Apex, there are a few sort of innovations, aren't there? It's a bit more athletic, your characters. Is that right?
Yeah, each character has like different skill sets, you know? So there's like a tank player, medic, people who deal out more damage than more DPS characters. So, and everyone sort of has special abilities. I usually generally play the medic role, but then I was getting very much into DPS after I realized that I can actually aim. I started being able to aim. I was like, I'm actually quite good at this.
So DPS is the role on the team where you're just trying to cause as much damage as possible.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, so I play either medic or DPS. So those are the two different characters I play. And I just absolutely fell in love with Apex. And I really like that I could talk to other people, friends as well, playing this, which was really great for... just when I was like by myself at home, or I couldn't leave the house, that sort of thing. I was like, we can just go on to Apex and we can play this game and we can still talk to each other. And it's you know, and a lot of us can be in the party even if we're all not playing the game. We can all just sit around the PlayStation chat and just game.
It's funny, I think during the pandemic, like people really started to see what you're describing there sort of became a universal experience, right? When no one could get out, suddenly people were just hanging out, or, you know, especially young people were hanging out in Fortnite, and they're really just, you know, hanging out with their friends. They're not really playing the game. The game is secondary, isn't it? But
oh,
wonderful.
It was just lovely. And it was just so much. And I got to make different friends that way. that I got to meet in person earlier this year in New York. I was like, I'd been playing with people for like 5 years. This was before Apex online, and then we got to meet in person. I was like, oh my God, you're real. It was just so cool because I was like, we've been gaming for like, I feel like I know you, and now we're like,
right.
So that's Apex has really connected me with a lot of people that I now know in real life as well. And one of my friends, she's actually my real friend now. But she was a gamer. She was just like a random. And now we're friends. And it's just,
now you actually talk outside of Apex.
Exactly. So it's, and I've cosplayed. I've dressed up as one of the characters from the game as well. And I guess I started putting on Apex tournaments because I started loving this game. And that's when EA reached out right. to us because I was doing that. So I wasn't actually doing it for their attention, which is insane because now I feel like it sounds like I was, but I didn't think someone as big as EA would ever reach out to us because they were just like local sort of things that we were doing. Just because I really loved this game so much, I was like, you know, like how I'm part of Assassin's Creed forums because I really love this game, someone to talk about it. So if there was Assassin's Creed Battle Royale, I would have probably done tournaments on that too. But Apex is set up in a way where you can do tournaments. And so I was running a lot of different tournaments for Apex. And a lot of people joined in because they were also obsessed with the game.
Oh, wonderful.
And this is history.
Great. Well, Annabelle, let's go through your console here. So we've got Grand Theft Auto, San Andreas, Assassin's Creed, Ezio's Trilogy, The Last of Us Part 1, The Sims 4, and Apex Legends. That's going to keep you going for years, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. For sure, like, good story. Sims, I mean, Sims is 2014, like you said, and I'm still playing it as if it just came out. So
excellent. Right, we need a name for your console that we're going to market it to the world so that everyone else can enjoy your five games. Have you got an idea for what you'd like to call it?
Oh, I don't know. What would I call it? A console? I'm not sure.
I'm sorry, I should have mentioned this to you before.
What would I call a console?
I can tell you some examples of some of the things that other people who have been on the podcast have called theirs. So, for example, Josh...
Actually, no, I don't want to know. I don't want to know because that will influence my decision if I hear someone else's. I think I might call my console maybe Evolve.
Nice.
You know? It's simple, but it's like...
Classic.
Yeah, it's classic. It's also just like maybe adding to it the way you can always add to Sims or the way Apex. Every season there's something new, but the base, the heart of it is always the same. So Evolve.
Yeah, lovely. The Evolve. Very good. Right. Well, it's been so good to meet you, chat. Just before I let you go, Annabelle, I've got one last question. So what can white people in the industry do to support your work better? You know, lots of people who work in games listen to this podcast. What can they do to help support you and your aims of your organization?
I guess they can join Melanin Gamers. Melanin Gamers is if they believe, because we do have a lot of people from different backgrounds. You don't have to be a person of color to join Melanin Gamers. And we have loads of people in Melanin Gamers because it's important that we all are championing this, you know, wherever you're from. Like, there's a lot of causes I champion that doesn't affect me personally, but I know that this is important. Right. You know, so we did a lot for Pride. I'm not LGBTQ, but I know that it's an important cause. You know, I can see that it's an important cause. And so, if there are people who are white who understand that, who believe that in systemic racism, then you want to promote inclusion and diversity, I think they should support Melanin Gamers goals. They can join our community. They can champion our causes, share our stuff online, check out our website and the different work that we're doing. Donate to Melanin Gamers because we are not for profit. there's so many things that they can do. Maybe also if they're gaming, next time online, check their friends and what they're saying to you as well, because we always want to make sure that these spaces are protected and are safe and everyone's having a good time.
Yeah, maybe if someone had done that, then your brother Alan would have got to keep playing Overwatch.
Exactly.
Okay, brilliant. And where can people find your work? What's the web address?
Oh, themelaningamers.com.
Melaningamers.com. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Annabelle, it's been lovely to meet you and to hear your story. Thank you for sharing it with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much to my guest, Annabelle Ashley Anthony. What a What a fun chat that was, and what a thoroughly lovely young person Annabelle is. It was great hearing her enthusiasm for each of her five choices. She loves those games, and it was really brilliant to hear her discussing those. Particularly enjoyed her telling us the story, the backstory that she's written for each of her Sims that she's currently playing as. Just great, great stuff. As well, really grateful to Annabelle for just being so open about living with sickle cell and her experiences with that. And of course, the role that video games have played for her, along, of course, with novels and other works of fiction. But the role that video games have played for her in, I guess, providing her a bit of escape, a bit of focus, things to do like that. A bit of, in the case of The Last of Us Part 1, a bit of fantasy escapism around the idea of being able to flee the hospital that has become a bit of a prison camp for you. So I'm just so grateful to Annabelle for talking about all of that so openly and frankly, and I hope you enjoyed that too. Maybe some of you also have illnesses that you've lived with for a long time, and so I'm sure hearing Annabelle talk about her experiences living with her body and her particular challenges will have been meaningful to you, I hope. Melanin Gamers, the group that Annabelle runs, you can find out more about them by visiting www.themelaningamers.com. There you can just follow their news, their articles, but most importantly, get involved in their community if that is something that would be helpful to you. Of course, yes, Annabelle was explaining that they will host online gaming events and things like that. And so perhaps that's something that you would like to get involved in as a place where you can be guaranteed that no one's going to call you terrible names or use slurs and things like that. Or perhaps you are an organisation who would like to partner with Melanin Gamers and, have a bit of what they have to offer at your event or at your company. So get in contact with them. They are obviously a good bunch. You can also follow their work on Instagram at Melanin Gamers, and they're also on Twitter at Melanin Gamers too. It's been an exciting month, hasn't it? We're currently in September 2023, if you're listening to this, so we've had some really good episodes that people have enjoyed. Peter Molyneux a couple of weeks ago, that episode caused quite a bit of a splash, as we might imagine from Peter Molyneux speaking publicly and openly. There were a bunch of news reports around that and some follow-ups and things like that. So yeah, you can Google Peter Molyneux and you can catch up on some of that ongoing saga. And then, of course, yeah, Clint Hocking last week. So great stuff. Thank you to those of you who have written to me suggesting some guests. Loads of you have done that. Oh my gosh, my list of people to approach is very long. Thomas Hattersley wrote suggesting, I have a suggestion for a guest. I don't know how easy it would be to get him, but as a child of the 80s, I would love to hear Dominic Diamond of Games Master. Yes, that would be great, wouldn't it? I actually have spoken to Rab Florence as well, who was the presenter of the recent Games Master reunion. That's not quite the word. Reboot, that is the word. And so Rab was up for coming on, but we just got to figure out a date. So yes, and I'll also try and drop Dominic a line at some point. Some ideas here from a dear listener, Matthew Block. He writes, Jeremy Blaustein, Lee Alexander, Matt Black, who of course is one half of the DJ group Cold Cut, Ian Bell, who worked with David Braben to make Elite. I am hoping, actually, in fact, to get David Braben on here. Julian Gollop, who worked on XCOM with his brother, I believe. Roberta Williams, one of the real grandmothers of the internet, if that's not pejorative. I think she's in her 70s. But anyway, yes, Roberta, that would be a very good person to get on as well. Ian McDonald, he also suggests Julian Gollop or his brother Nick. Ian also says another game I sank a lot of time into in the past was Championship Manager, now of course Football Manager. The brothers behind the original were Paul and Ov Collier. I'd love to hear either one of them on podcast too. Yes, I know Miles Jacobson as well, who works on Football Manager and who has a really interesting story coming from the music industry to work in the games industry. So I might also approach him. So yeah, thank you. There's lots more, but I'll stop there. But yeah, please do keep suggesting people. I have to say, there seems to be a lot more interest in hearing from game designers and people who work in the games industry. But I am going to continue to ask for people, public figures, celebrities, comedians, whatever you want to call them, to come on, because I think it's interesting to hear from people who work from outside of the games industry, as well as those people who work within it. I hope you don't mind that. If you would like to get involved and give deeper feedback or hear about plans with the podcast, please come and be a supporter. patreon.com/myperfectconsole. You will get your episodes early, ad-free. You'll get access to the community. You get to hear what 4 or 5 guests are coming up before each month. So that's a nice heads up. Later this year, I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do it, but I've got to figure this out. We're going to be doing a knockout competition to crown the My Perfect Console of the Year. And yes, as well, there's a dear group of supporters who are currently doing lots of nerdy stuff to bring our database of all the game choices to some lovely visualization. I think there's a plan even to let members of the public upload their or choose their 5 games and present those somehow on the website. I don't know, some plans afoot. If you'd like to get involved in those, pop along to Patreon. If you just would like to follow the news of the podcast, go to twitter.com/Simon Parkin or twitter.com/MyPerfectConsole. Those are the 2 handles that are relevant. And yeah, you can just catch up on what guest is coming out next week and also read a list of the guest choices for the previous week. Okay, right, that's a lot of talking. That's probably enough from me. I will be back again. Who have we got next week? We've got Kieran Gillen, the comic book writer who started out on PC Gamer, a legendary games journalist who then has become a legendary comic book author who's written for Star Wars, for X-Men, for everyone going, as well as his own brilliant series such as Phonogram, Wicked and the Divine, and his current project, which I think is called Dice. Anyway, it's going to be a corker. It's good to have you along for the ride. I'll see you again next week with Kieran and his 5 game choices and 1 more perfect console. Till then, goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.